Welcome to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Chandrika Venkatraman. Join me as I talk to small businesses from across the world to learn about their supply chains, their support systems, and what keeps them moving. Today, my guest is Vish Puttagunta, CEO of Power Central, headquartered in Texas. Vish has combined his expertise in analytics with his passion for food manufacturing to deliver a cost-effective solution to small businesses in the food industry. Welcome, Vish. We're excited to have you here today. How would you describe Power Central to a growth stage CPG?
Hi, Chandrika. How are you? So I'm the CEO of Power Central, and the problem that we saw, Power Central is a software side company. We actually own our own food packaging company. So in general, every food packaging company, especially in manufacturing and packaging, they need to do three things really well. They gotta be able to maintain their SQF or BRC compliance, so do their lot-based traceability and documentation. They gotta know what their cost per pack is at all times, and they gotta be able to track freight, labor, item costs, and all that. And the third one is they got to know, they got to have their planning in order, when to produce, what to produce. And what we did at Power Central is to provide a comprehensive set of solution that is not just an ERP, but make all of these aspects that every food packaging company needs in one holistic solution.
So how are you different from the other options available to small businesses, such as NetSuite, Sage?
Yeah, so one of the challenges that we had early on in our packaging company is that, like, if you think about NetSuite, right? NetSuite is from Oracle. It's a very good ERP. What we like about the NetSuite ERP or Dynamics 365 Business Central, which is what we base our solution on, is that they're great ERPs in that they have accounting functions, they have sales, purchasing, warehouse management, production, lot-based traceability. All these feature sets are there. So it's not a question of whether it is NetSuite versus Microsoft. It's more of like, but that's all it is, right? The problem that we had when we implemented these solutions is that, yes, the solution was really good, but the thing is, it was not really easy to use, right? So, people had to, for example, our material handler had to work on the forklift for 2 to 3 hours, then sit in front of the computer for another 45 minutes and enter all that information into the ERP. They were not doing that very consistently. And as a result, the data was just not getting into the ERP in time. Why? Because the ERP was just not easy to use and it did not fit their processes really well. So it's not a matter of whether NetSuite is good or Dynamics Business Central is good. I mean, we can put Sage aside because Sage really doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't do a good job with either, but I would compare myself to NetSuite. But what NetSuite does well, Business Central, Dynamics 365 does well. The problem is ease of use in both of these things. So what we did is we really created a set of 10 mobile applications that fit the needs of these, whether it is material handler, shipping, receiving, production, line operator. So we created persona-based apps that are very easy to use, mobile friendly, and they're tightly integrated with the ERP as well as barcodes. And that's what's special about our offering. And the second aspect that we had to extend the ERP is the reporting and the intelligence aspect of it. Whether it is Dynamics 365 Business Central, whether it is Oracle NetSuite, their inbuilt planning tools are really very, very rule-based. They're not really analytics-based, right? ERP is supposed to be, if you do a good job at it, be a good source of truth, right? But what we had, people try to do a lot of MRP planning and they make it a lot of rule-based, which kind of works for certain scenarios, but it really didn't work for us at all. So we really need a whole set of reporting. And that's why we chose Microsoft as a platform, because Oracle NetSuite is great, but I think Oracle dropped the ball on mobile platform, being able to easily build no-code, low-code applications, as well as intelligence. We have the power of Power BI and Azure ML and all the other more sophisticated tools that Microsoft can provide us that Oracle simply does not have at this point of time.
So would you say that a lot of your, all of these solutions that you're providing, it is all very customized, right? And it is really developed based on the challenges that you guys faced yourself in your food manufacturing business, right?
That's right. Yeah. So traditionally, how do people implement ERPs, right? When we, you know, back in 2017, our packaging company, we wanted to implement an ERP, right? So what do? We go to an ERP consulting company and they come on board. And for the first 6 to 8 weeks, they're kept on billing us $10,000 to $15,000 every week. We were getting zero return of investment. And on top of that, they did not understand SQF. They did not understand the needs of a food packaging company. For them, this was just a tool. It was just an ERP tool. And they were learning our business on our dime. And then, you know, 6 to 8 weeks and $60,000 to $80,000 later, they gave us like another proposal for $300,000. And we were like, okay, we just burned through whatever cash we did not even have. And now they're telling us it's another $200,000 to $300,000. God knows how long this is going to take and whether they're going to stick to that budget, right? So that was a problem that we really faced, is that why does every company, especially under like, you know, $100 million, they're not going to have $1 million budgets. So we want to make sure that like, but every food packaging company needs these three things, right? They not only need a proper ERP to do all their finance, accounting, warehouse management, and everything, but they need SQF traceability. They need barcodes. They need document traceability. They need procurement planning. They need production planning. They need real-time reports. So we just designed our solution very specifically for food and manufacturing companies, right? Food packaging and manufacturing companies. So we really don't go too much outside of that domain expertise because we know that domain really well. We know the SQF, BRC regulations really well. So we understand how to document everything according to their specifications. We understand how the packaging and production planning and procurement planning work. So we kind of stick to that process, right? Because food packaging is very, very different. Food packaging or food production is very different than how an automobile gets made. Right. So we want to like and production planning and procurement planning is very unique to how the processes are. Right. So you're not like making an engine first and then you're not making like the, you know, dashboard second and putting them together. Right. In food production, that's not what happens. You have raw materials in a single production run. You make a batch of product or you make 10,000 different, cases or something like that. Right.
Absolutely. So just spell it out for me. What is the profile of your ideal client?
So for us, the ideal client is a company that has really, like, if you think about it, a company would start $5 to $100 million recurring revenue. Those are the clients that are ideal for us. And usually those clients our ideal customer, you know, when they start reaching that $5 to $10 to $12 million, you know, that's when they start getting the Krogers and the Walmarts of the world. And when a Kroger and a Walmart, give them the business, they don't grow like 10%, 20% year on year. They're growing like 30, 40% a month or like 200 to 500% a year. And they really, and the margins are not, you know, too much, right? You'll be lucky to get like 20% gross margin or in a situation like that. So they have to have a lot of automation necessary. And that's where they truly need an ERP with mobile apps and a lot of backend automation so that they can be profitable at that scale. So that's our ideal client, you know, 5 million to 100 million. They've been, you know, grinding their way up to getting to that level. And now they're hitting the big leagues in retail or, you know, big customers, and they have to scale very rapidly. And they got to be able to delegate functions to procurement manager, production manager. And that's usually our ideal customer, you know.
And clearly your client must be self-manufacturing, right?
Yeah, so they should either be a contract manufacturer, right, that they work with, different brands and stuff like that. So they have a lot of need, you know, their SKUs start, you know, proliferating a lot, right? You know, if you're a single brand and you probably have like 10 or 20 SKUs, right, you might hit some of the problems a little later. If you start with QuickBooks and Excel, you can get away, because if you're only having 10 or 20 SKUs and you know you figured it out, usually those guys that have brands that have their own manufacturing do not need, typically we see them not needing an ERP until they get to about 7 to 10 million, right? But the co-mans, now once they start having co-mans and they work with 10 to 20 brands and now they're like 400 to 500 SKUs, they tend to reach the issues with procurement planning and compliance way earlier, like maybe at about $4 to $5 million is where we start seeing them struggling. And that's an ideal time for them to start thinking about a proper ERP.
So let's just talk about the whole ERP solution, right? What is a company that's in a growth phase? What is it missing out by not implementing an ERP solution?
So the problem has been that, number one, you know, what they're missing is that, you know, it's going to be a lot of paper, right? Like, for example, when we were scaling from that $500,000 to $2 million, right? You know, people were just picking some lot number and putting some other lot number in the paper, right? And because of that, the not only was the SQF compliance at risk, but also our inventory was completely off. And we had to do cycle counts on inventory almost every, on a weekly basis. We were spending a couple of hours every day just doing the planning and stuff like that, right? So, and on, not only that, a lot of times the worst thing is you're working 24/7, you're working like two shifts, you're working like 80 hours a day, 80 hours a week, and you're still not making money, right? Because a lot of times if you do not track the cost per pack, you might actually be losing money on that order and you wouldn't even know about it until the end of the year or when you actually close the books. Whereas for us, you're able to track everything in real time, right? All the compliance is happening with paperless. It's very simple scans. When the auditor comes in and they say, hey, here's the item number, here's the lot number, where's the QA documentation, show me the end-to-end trace from receiving to production to shipping, we're able to do that in less than a couple of minutes, right? That's what they will get instead of having like two, three people write the paperwork and consolidate it. They will get the cost per pack in real time. So they can immediately say, hey, did my freight get out of control? Did my cost of the material get out of control? Or did my labor get out of control? And they can track that in real time. So that's what they're missing if they don't use an ERP. So typically co-mans that do not have brands, they definitely care about, you know, cost per pack, and even the compliance becomes a very, very big problem. Brands, at some point of time, cost per pack becomes a problem because, you know, when they're, especially when they're doing a lot of it, because if they only have 20 SKUs, paperwork, they might be able to get away with it. But where they get into problems is now they have like 15, 20, 30, 40 customers ordering 30, 40, 50 orders a week or 100 orders a week. And now they have to keep track of all that and manually tracking that and mapping that all the way from sales to production to staging the shipping and going out. It just creates a lot of process for them. And that's what we automate.
Can you briefly share some instances where Power Central improved top line or bottom line for a client? Maybe just a couple of instances so, you know, our listeners can actually put it in context and see how it might apply to their own business.
So, you know, both with our company, Pack and Fresh, and one of our flagship companies, Enterprise CP, you know, for example, Enterprise CP is a great example, right? Like when they started working with us, they just got their first couple of Walmart orders. And the CEOs, the CEO and the controller, they came from a much larger contract manufacturing company. So they knew what they needed, right? So they knew that if Walmart really presses the gas, they're going to be in trouble. So they timed everything correctly. And when they got on board with our solution, a lot of the data entry, like from sales orders automatically getting through EDI to automatically doing the picks using the barcode mobile apps, automatically generating the bill of ladings, automatically sending them back the advanced shipping notifications, you know, and the invoices using EDI. All of this automation is what really helped them scale, right? So they did not have to, even though their business grew multiple times, they did not have to hire like 5 to 6 times the number of human resources to scale. And if you look at their on-time and full scores, they actually are in the top 99th percentile, 95th to 99th percentile of their, you know, in their category.
What is your implementation timeline like? I know you talked about your own example with Backfresh, you know, where you had ERP consultants shadowing you guys and doing all of that. Of course, I think your solution, because you guys are customizing stuff for food manufacturing with your own knowledge, I would anticipate that your timeline is far shorter, right? What's your average timeline really like?
So usually we are able to deploy an entire solution on their field within 12 to 16 weeks, right? And that's because we have really good templates of applications, right? And we are getting to the point where we're actually not even tweaking these applications one way or another, because we kind of have a very good footprint. We have companies that are $3 million, $4 million. We have companies that are $70, $80 million. We have companies that are $100 million, and we have really good templates. So when we go to talk to a customer in the first 2 to 3 weeks, we understand where they are, and when we go in there, we even deploy a mock environment, we deploy a printer, we deploy a scanner, and actually are able to walk through how these apps work in their environment, right? And within the 6th to 8th week, they kind of, you know, we kind of take the, in the first that third week visit, we get the information about like how do these you know, how are their processes different, right? So usually what we find is that in the 10 applications that we you know, deploy, usually most of the apps can work out of the box, but there are like two or three, especially around shipping, especially around production, you know, they say, hey, you know, what about if this happens in our production run, what do we do that? So those are the kind of tweaks that we do. And by the sixth or eighth week, we go and redeploy those apps and make sure that everything is working. And from the sixth week to eighth week to 12th week or eighth week to 16th week, it's more about training the main operators, training their staff, making sure that they are, you know, they're able to go through the happy paths really well. And at least like the top two or three exceptions are able to do it really well, right? Because otherwise, you know, if you go online, if you go live with an ERP and within the first 1 or 2 weeks, if you're not able to stabilize your operations and you're not able to trust your inventory, you know, it's really hard to come back from that. So we try to make sure that, you know, people are very well trained. And, you know, we're able to make sure that on day zero, they have as least disruptions as possible.
So if I hear your implementation timeline, right, would you say that, you know, by the sixth or the eighth week, your client is actually, even if it is in a demo or test environment, they're actually using your solution, right?
So yes, they're using our solution. They're using the solution on their products, you know?
Yeah.
So for example, I mean, for, you know, one of the first demos we had, you know, when we were training with our generic stuff, we had peanut butter, right? Man, and then we went to this, you know, non-allergen company and they could not get their head around peanuts allergies, right? So they could, oh, but we don't pick peanuts. We don't receive peanuts. So, you know, to basically avoid that, what we're doing now is in the 6th to 8th week or even the 3rd week, we kind of load up their items. Like, for example, we're working with a salsa company and they do chile and salsa. So we actually load up in the first 1 or 2 weeks itself, we load up their items, their item master, their ingredients, their vendors. So they're using their items, what they're familiar with, and they're able to see a lot of exceptions a lot earlier as opposed to like going live and finding out all these issues later on.
So I was going to ask you a question about how do you guys ensure zero disruption during implementation? But it sounds like you might have already answered that question, right? Because you're doing this whole handholding from, you know, the 6th week to the 16th week. I'm guessing that's what really takes care of, you know, any questions about or any concerns that somebody may have about disruption to their process.
Right. We do three things to make sure that there's zero disruption. Number one, in the first 3 weeks, we already have their items on the, you know, so when we deploy the first printer and scanner, it's already their items. It's already their, you know, it's already their items, their vendors, their customers already, right? Third, you know, and then once we go and they're already practicing, and from that 6th, 8th week to the 12th week, we're doing a lot of practice. Right? That's the second thing we do. We just make sure that like at least like the main shipping person, the main production person, the main sales and salesperson, the main purchasing person, these four personas, right? Sometimes they're just three people or four people, but these main people are able to operate on both Business Central, on the apps, and they're very comfortable with that. That's the second piece. The third piece I would say is actually very important is that we do not trust Excel sheets. When we, you know, for example, like, you know, we used to basically ask them like, hey, give me your latest status of inventory in an Excel sheet, right? And later on, we realized, dude, if these guys can actually give you a really good Excel sheet with the item master and the inventory correctly, then they don't need an ERP. So what we do instead is like, you know, in the 6th week, 8th week, when we go and deploy the printers, you know, all the printers, all the scanners, their inventory managers start to print labels for the bins, print labels for the items. And the 2 days before deployment, our team flies in there and we scan the inventory. And as they're scanning the inventory, we're really providing the reports on like, hey, you know, your people have, you know, inventoried 10,000 of these items, 20,000 of these items. They evaluate to about $1.5 million. Like, do these numbers make sense to you before we push them into the ERP? So a lot of times if like people double count, triple count, or they don't count, they're like, no, I'm supposed to have at least 1,000 pounds of ginger valued at like how many ever, you know, maybe $2,000. Like, why is that not here? So we have a control tower. We have people that are actually scanning it and our people are watching their, you know, watching their back as they're doing it. And before we hit that positive adjustment into the ERP, we have the controller of the company looking at that whole report and basically say, yep, this looks about right. We should have $2.2 million or we should have $5 million in our inventory. That sounds about right. Let's press the button. And now all the inventory goes into the ERP. So then when it goes live, the inventory is where it's supposed to be. You know, which location, which bin, which lot number, all the labels are there. So there's no second guessing about what the inventory, whether the inventory was supposed to be there or not.
That's a good point here. No, when we talk about, you know, everything that you guys are doing, clearly it is with an eye towards improving user adoption. But I'm sure there are still some hurdles, right? You still see some challenges. What are those that you frequently encounter with user adoption?
So, you know, in general, and that's another way that we differentiate ourselves, right? A lot of times the consulting companies, they charge by the hour every week. For us, majority of the payments come as we are deploying the applications. So for us, we incentivized ourselves only when the company is truly using the system and benefiting from the system, we actually make money, right? So we take a lot of risk. We share a lot of risk with our customers, right? We are betting on them to be successful. So we want them to be successful, right? So, and that shows the way in which we bill. Like, for example, they own a small token of money when they start. And as we go into deployment, that's when the first phase of deployment, that's when, you know, at least half of the payments are actually due only after deployment. And then it's after another 2 months where we transfer all the bill, you know, all their accounting and their balance sheets. It's almost 2 months after the original deployment. That's when the final, like 20%, you know, almost 30 to 40% of the, you know, installation fee is due towards the end. And the reason why we did that is because we wanted to make sure that these guys are using it, they're getting the benefit from it, right? So instead of like spending $1 million on capital expenditure, they're making smaller payments and they're able to get the benefit, and they know that they're getting the return of investment, right? For example, like, you know, there was one person in one of the companies, and his sole job was basically designing labels for Walmart, you know, and going and sticking to all these pallets. So he would basically get up in the morning, go to QuickBooks, look at all these sales orders, addresses, he would design the labels, he would print the labels, go and do that. And that was almost like full-time job of his. With this system, we were able to just, like, you know, press, you know, he just picks the items to the Walmart order, presses the Walmart label button, and then all the labels just come out, right? So the return of investment has to be a no-brainer for the customer. The other way that we do it is, a lot of times software companies will want the customer to do the root cause analysis, really understand it, and then explain the solution, and then they open a ticket with us, you know, with the software vendor, and they basically go and actually debug that. For us, we think about it very differently. For us, if the customer doesn't use the product well, we want to know ahead of time. So we don't even wait until the tickets are actually getting opened. Like, for example, one of the companies that we went live with, for whatever reason, you know, the production orders were not getting reconciled on a day-to-day basis. So we were looking at the unposted SM production orders for the 3 days, and we saw, like, what the heck is going on? Why is this lady not reconciling the orders? And we had to go behind the, you know, and then we had to go and ask the CFO and basically talk to the production managers, like, what is the problem? And they were like, hey, you know, our receiving guy was not able to receive it, or he fell sick, so he did not receive it, so I could not positive adjust this inventory. So we had to work with their process problems to make sure that, like, you know, where's the process gap? You know, how can we improve that? Is it an application change? Is it like, hey, how do we make sure that this procurement person talks to the receiving person, talks to the production person, like all these process gaps? So we don't wait until they screw up, right? A lot of times we are very proactive in making sure that, like, hey, you know, we know very, very well, like, if the sales orders don't get posted, like if you look at the sales orders and you see that this is supposed to ship on the second, but if you still see that sales order still in the ERP, we know that's a problem. So we have these number of unposted assembly production orders, number of unposted sales orders. So we have very clear metrics in terms of, like, how our customers are using the solution. And if we see that there's a problem with the data, we go and say, hey, there's a big problem here. You guys are not following the process. What's going on? Like, is it the app problem? Is it the process problem? Let's knock it out.
Do you ever think about scalability of that process that you have? Like, is it possible to scale it?
We think so, because, you know, and that's the reason why we're spending a lot more time. Previously, we actually used to deploy it in like 9 to 12 weeks of time. Then what we realized is that, hey, if these guys are, like, missing some of these processes, and if they're not really doing these mock receiving, mock production, mock shipping, if they don't do it again and again, they're going to fall behind. So that's the reason why we're actually went from like an 8 to 12 weeks deployment cycle to like almost 12 to 16 weeks, because we knew that the core people had really have to understand this well. So it's a lot about training and really understanding like what they're doing and stuff, you know, and helping them nurture that behavior.
No, would you feel comfortable if I asked you a question about the cost aspect of it? I know it would probably vary very widely from, you know, customer to client.
It's one of the things that we really pioneered, you know. I mean, for us, you know, it's somewhere between that $50,000 to $100,000 is a fixed fee based on the feature set, right? So our target audience is again like that 5, 10, 15, 20 sub-$100 million companies. Beyond that, it varies very little compared to, like, for example, if a company has one warehouse production facility versus like 6, 7 warehouse production facilities, there's an incremental cost. But typically a $5 to $15 million company, you know, depending, they usually have like 1 or 2 or 3 facilities usually, right? By the time they get to that. So we have a fixed starting cost, like that 50 to 100 is where it starts, depending upon the size. And then after that, it's like features based, right? Like, you know, if they need EDI, it's an additional charge or something like that. But once we commit to that price, we do not budge. Like, we don't go like into deployment and say, oh, you did not tell us about this feature off shipping or this feature off Shopify. At that point of time, hey, if you got Shopify, if you got EDI, I don't care what happens, we're going to make that EDI work, right? So it gives a lot of, you know, risk tolerance to our customers, because they know that if they put aside this budget, there's no guessing after that. It will happen within this budget.
Now, I know when we started off, right, you were talking about, you know, businesses that are growing rapidly because they are scaling into traditional retail. But I'm guessing the solution is equally applicable if you have a client that's scaling through e-commerce channels, right? Is it any different?
Actually, e-commerce, we've invested quite a bit in Shopify in the last year to two. What we're seeing is that, you know, Shopify is one B2C e-commerce. We kind of feel like at this point of time, Shopify is the number one winner. B2B e-commerce, I think there are a few players. I think Shopify still has to catch up with people like BigCommerce, I would think, especially for vendor portals and more complex B2B level transactions. You know, we are seeing, again, like, you know, we just talked to a customer yesterday and they were having the exact same problem, right? It's one of those things where they have a really great brand. They do like a lot of B2B shipping to Walmarts of the world. And they take a lot of pride in their B2C, but this 1 or 2% or 5% of the business causes like 50% of the headaches, right? So really making sure that the integration with that Shopify or BigCommerce work really well, not just with the ERP, but even with the mobile apps. That's the problem, right? Because right now we were literally talking to them and they were like, you know, Vish, it takes me the lag between an order going into Shopify to my ERP, that's already a 2-day delay. Right. And then the inventory is like not there. And then I don't even know which lot number I'm shipping to which B2C customer. So the connectivity between Shopify or this BigCommerce to the not just the ERP, but also the mobile apps is super critical. Right. And that's a growing pain that we are able to solve. Like, I mean, we have implementations where we've done the entire Shopify, the Shopify website, the Shopify front end, the back end connectivity to ERP. It's all seamlessly connected to their mobile app. So as soon as the Shopify order goes out, right, somebody makes a Shopify order, it gets replicated into the ERP. Their mobile app will actually show, hey, this is not a Walmart order. This is actually a Shopify B2C order. And they just pick it and then they're able to, like, you know, print the label from, you know, Shopify store or ShipStation or whatever. But then they have a known proof that this label was not just printed, but this person actually picked these salsa bottles and he posted the warehouse shipment in the ERP. So the inventory is also synchronized with what's going on with Shopify.
Thank you for explaining that. So, you know, we talked about how the Power Central solution is ideal for manufacturers that are upwards of $5 million in revenue. Mm-hmm. What about the ones that are scaling up but haven't yet hit that mark? Are there any effective intermediate solutions that you as an ERP expert are aware of?
You know, we looked into that one. The problem that I see, there are a couple of other, I'm not going to name the names, but they're like do-it-yourself WMS systems, right? There's no comprehensive ERPs out there that I know of, right? There are some do-it-yourself WMS systems that claim to connect well with QuickBooks and stuff like that. They're mobile friendly, The problem with them, again, is like, do they, we, at least our experience has been that it's not worth it, you know, because even that will take a lot of effort to implement anyways to get it right. And now you're neither here nor there. And what we've seen is that below $5 million, honestly, if you are a million, $2 million customer and you have 20, 30 SKUs, honestly, if you're able to do it in a QuickBooks, you should do it in QuickBooks and Excel. It's just not worth it, you know, because in the end, if it's a little pain, it's okay. You know, I mean, you don't, because all of, to get it right, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying the tools are not correct, right? I mean, honestly, there are people that will probably implement a Business Central solution for $5,000 or $10,000, but is that well fit for your company? Absolutely freaking not, right? And as a matter of fact, the smaller your company is, the more exceptions you will have, you know? Because our larger clients, right, they don't even touch anything below a pallet. It's actually easier for them. They're actually easier for us to maintain. The smaller guys, like, you know, sometimes they touch a pallet. Sometimes it's a case. Sometimes it's like they're literally taking like a scoop and actually scooping out the powder or scooping out the vanilla essence. They will have more exceptions. Honestly, they're more complicated than even some of our $5 to $10 million customers or $20 million, $100 million customers.
Thank you so much, Vish. I think the Power Central solution sounds super holistic. And I think you've really answered several questions that I had about how, you know, how a business can actually put this to effective use. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can get more information on today's episode in the show notes or at source-refresh.com/podcast. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from.